We'll call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Conference Committee to order. Today is May 13th, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take attendance by roll.
Chair Hansen is present. Representative Wasliwick.
Wasliwick present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher present.
Representative Heintzeman.
Heintzeman present.
Senator Ingebretson.
Ingebretson present.
Senator Rood. I can see Senator Rood is entering the waiting room. We will come back. Senator Eichhorn.
Eichhorn present.
Senator Tomassoni. Senator Tomassoni. Senator Westrum. Senator Westrum. And to go back, Senator Rood.
Rood present.
All right, and quorum is present.
Thank you. A quorum is present. Members, we have a House offer that was posted last night. We'd like Ms. Taylor to go through that. And then today we have the Minnesota Zoo and the Minnesota Science Museum here, and we'd like to have a presentation from them on kind of their fiscal situation. In the last 24 hours, Senator Ingebrigtsen and I have sent joint letters to the governor on timber relief and also on tourism to see if there was an opportunity for funding those. We would like to be supporting the Science Museum and the Minnesota Zoo with trying to meet their needs as well. So Senator Ingebrigtsen, do you have any comments?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's important. I think the members all know that we are signing those letters in agreement for the inquiry into the federal dollars. It's obviously we don't know what's going to happen there, but at least we're I think we're showing that we're going to try and find a dollar wherever we can here to help offset the budget. So. That's about it, Mr. Chair, for now. So I'm looking forward to the description of the offer. Thank you.
Ms. Taylor, would you proceed?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to walk through the House's fourth offer from yesterday, dated 7:45. First, the offer states that this is a policy offer, excluding the LCCMR and other fiscal items. And then it states that the House still prefers to handle the LCCMR bill separately. And then it lists a number of policy items that I'll go through. The first is the House is agreeing to accept identical and similar provisions as proposed in the Senate offer, except it would not include the lands bill items, which would be those that appear in House Article 10 or two sections related to the water use permits and bulk transport issue. The House agrees to drop Article 9, which is the electric assisted bicycles, and remove it from future offers or discussion. And then the House would accept Senate Section 47, which modifies the definition of minnows, if the Senate would accept the two sections making gar game fish. The House would accept Senate Section 51, which repeals a sunset on a provision that allowed portable stands to be left in certain WMAs in northern Minnesota, if the Senate would accept the House's turtle position. The House would accept Senate Section 63, restricting shooting at decoys from a motor vehicle, if the Senate would accept the House Section 68, which expands the ban on importing cervidae carcasses, and also House Section 5 from Article 7, which would require conservation officers to be included in Board of Animal Health CWD inspections. The House would propose to accept Senate Section 65, making modifications to night vision equipment requirements, if the Senate would accept House Section 32, which is the House's statewide invasive species management plan modifications. The House would accept Senate Section 67 regarding permits for nuisance bears, if the Senate would accept a number of House water gremlin changes. And I won't go through those there, but they're listed there in the offer that I believe has been posted for everyone. And then the House would accept Senate Section 166, the Bois de Sioux Watershed District, provision if the Senate would accept House Section 30 restricting the use of insecticides on state lands. And then the House does not accept the two-year moratorium on adopting vehicle emission standards.
Members, any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
If there's nobody else, I'm sorry, I should have looked to see if there's anybody else. Okay, Mr. Chair. First of all, thank you for the offer. I would probably like to go down it if I could, Mr. Chair, and ask a few questions. It appears that we're bargaining against the agency bills here, the DNR and the MPCA agency bills, and not new bills, nothing new here. I'm wondering about the garfish. If that was actually a bill, do you know if that was actually a bill? Maybe Janelle can answer that. And maybe the DNR can weigh in on that if at all possible.
Ms. Taylor and then Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, I don't believe the GAR provisions were in a bill. They were came in through amendment on the House.
Okay.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, that is correct.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
For clarity, just explain the making garfish a game fish. Mr. Meyer.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. The language in the bill would classify GAR as game fish and give us the authority to manage take and seasons on that species.
Yeah.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. And maybe a little further discussion, if you will, as to why you're doing that. Is it something that I know they're natural to our waters. Do they assist in the fighting actually invasive species, invasive carp, I understand, or can you explain that just a little bit further, please?
Mr. Chairman, members, again, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. As we've discussed, the garfish lives in low oxygen backwaters, primarily in the state of Minnesota, the same kind of ecosystems or aquatic habitat that invasive carp like to live in. So they do eat invasive carp if they're in the area. We don't have the fish in great numbers. I think garfish and bowfish are what I'll call canaries in the coal mine or bellwether species we want to keep an eye on to make sure our ecosystems are healthy. And as I said, we don't know a lot on the populations of them. We were looking at trying to remove them or discussing removing them from the commercial fish list. Right now, commercial fish include rough fish, and it's in the definition of a rough fish, a gar is right now, to give us a little more authority and protect them as long as some of our other native species, like buffalo and bowfish, as I said, and some of those other fish that are really indicators of our ecosystems in those areas.
Senator,
thank you. And I'm just wondering, obviously this is a DNR initiative and maybe you can tell me, what the popularity of the bow fishing over the last years. I know Chair Hansen and myself have been around along with several of our members when that was talked about. Do you see them, you say you're not familiar with the population, but do you see the depopulation concern as far as bow fishing?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, Bob Meyer again. As we've talked about, actually we have a budget position to allow us to regulate bow fishing tournaments. Part of that regulation authority or ability would to put conditions on the taking of fish such as gar and bowfish. because if we have seen some tournaments take an extraordinary number of bull or gar in areas of the Mississippi that we're concerned about. So with that in mind, we wanted to regulate the tournaments that way. It's not like we're out shocking these water bodies to test for fish species like we do walleyes, for example, on certain areas where we have to come up with the allotted quota. So protecting the fish, we think, is important. And I might just say it's very similar to the walleye issue in the Senate bill, right? This would be classifying a fish as a game fish through legislative action. So I hope that as we consider the gar, we can also consider the four walleye language as well.
Okay, that's a little more clear, I think, to myself and for sure some of the members. Moving down to the Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Moving down to the position of the lands bill, can you explain to me what part of the lands bill that might be of angst with the House? I mean, that seems to be something we do every year. Can maybe Mr. Chairman, if you have any ideas about that at all?
So Senator Ingebrigtsen, after our discussion yesterday where we had talked about a policy only, we had to go through ways and means on our lands bill because it had a money impact. So it was we considered that it was fiscal because we had to run it as a fiscal bill. And so that's why that is not included, because you had asked for policy only, no fiscal. So there's a number of provisions in the bill that I would call probably hybrid, you know, that there's a fiscal impact. And we tried to be very clear that everything that's in front of you does not have a fiscal impact. So that's why the lands bill was not included. That's also why the water export was not included, because we had a fiscal note on our provision on that. So we wanted to make sure we were following through on your and my discussion along with Commissioner Stroman yesterday, that we were only on policy with this offer.
And of course, the Mr. Chair,
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yeah, this. The offer, and I sometimes end up going up backwards here. The LCCMR is certainly something that I think I've made it very clear is going to stay in the bill. So at least that's the House position at this time. And the other big issue that I have, I'm sorry.
Just and on that, because that's the LCCMR is obviously fiscal. We didn't include that in the offer as well. So. Anything, any fees, any fiscal impact, any fiscal note part of that we tried to keep those out. So,
Senator, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if you get a little better description. These are huge policy changes for Water Gremlin here. The exchange seems to be. With all due respect, with regards to the bear trap, can I have somebody explain what exactly these are, and just highlight them if you would. Maybe Janelle can do that, or whoever wants to do that.
And Senator Ingebrigtsen, just on that, and Ms. Taylor can do it. But there are several sections that are one word changes that the word reopen is in there. So they're cited on several bodies of law. And there's several sections that have a one word change. And Ms. Taylor could talk about those. So the reason there are several Water Gremlin ones is it's the same language replicated in different sections of law. But Ms. Taylor could go through the details there. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, I'll probably fumble a little bit here as I try to find them in the side by side, but the first one is on R76, Section 4. This one is one of those one word changes. You'll see it adds or cease. This would allow the PCA to enforce laws by ordering them to, allowing them to order the cessation of performance. And then I can move on to the next one if everyone's ready.
Mr. Chair, would there be a, Mr. Chair?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Would there be a physical cost to that if agreed upon?
So we checked with Mr. Hagemeyer before we put these in the offer to make sure that there are some other water gremlin ones that are fiscal. And so we did not include those, but, and I don't know if Mr. Hagemeyer wants to confirm that communication.
Well, no, that's fine. I do know that there were some dollars attached to the to some of the provisions. I just wanted to make sure the ones we're going over today didn't have any fiscal implications. So thank you. You can go ahead if you'd like.
Ms. Taylor.
Yeah, the next one would be Section 6 in Article 4. That's on R77. This one would clarify that injunctive relief may include the requirement for a facility or person to cease operations. And I can go to the next one. Section 7 also on that page. This would prohibit the PCA from granting extensions simply due to the cost of, solely based on the cost of complying with a stipulation agreement. And then the next one is also on that page. This would allow the PCA to require a facility that perhaps didn't get a permit to kind of comply with the requirements of that permit. And this is language that's also repeated as well as the stipulation agreement language later on in sections 38 and 39, just in chapter 16. And then the next one would be on section 37. It'll take me a minute to find that one. This would be on R123. And this one, the House is proposing just accepting a portion of the House language, and that would be on 167.1 and 167.2, adding reopen to the list, to the enforcement authorities. And then unless you want me to point out 38 and 39, which is a repeat of the previous two sections I went through in a different chapter, that would conclude those sections.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
And so that one that Ms. Taylor referenced, so we actually split that section to keep the money out of that one. So.
And the bottom one, Mr. Chair? Section 439. PC authority to enforce permit requirements. Okay, I understand it now. Looking at Mr. Chair, if I could.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yeah, one more and then some comments. The second from the bottom regards to the Drainage Boys de Sioux Water Project. It's a standalone. They want to do the thing. They want to do this and that, and you have in there with regards to insecticides. So maybe you can further explain that, knowing right now that the DNR already does not allow insecticide use on state lands. Can you, someone explain to me what, why we're even talking about that? I think it's a house only provision.
Yep. Senator Ingebrigtsen, you may remember this from 2 years ago. This was the a precursor was the same and similar on insecticides, and actually it's the neonicotinoids that are used in seed treatment for food plots. But the difference this year from 2 years ago is that we added chlorpyrifos in that. And that was Representative Morrison's bill. And if she could maybe just talk a little bit about chlorpyrifos. So it's not all insecticides. It's neonicotinoids, which are a seed treatment, but chlorpyrifos. And so I would defer to Representative Morrison on chlorpyrifos. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, chlorpyrifos is insecticide that has been banned in Europe and in several states in the United States. It was banned for indoor use in the United States in 2001 as the evidence continued to pile up about adverse impacts on human health and very specifically on children, pregnant women, and developing fetuses. It was set to be banned in the United States, I think during the toward the end of the Obama administration, and the Trump EPA overturned that decision. So this is something that we are behind the eight ball on acting on. We need to remove chlorpyrifos from use. It's a very dangerous chemical that harms developing fetuses, children, pregnant women, and I think we would be proud in Minnesota to, I would like to say lead, but at this point we wouldn't be leading. We'd be leading in the Midwest.
And Dr. Morrison, you're not, your proposal is not banning it everywhere. It's just on these public uses. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. In this portion of the bill, that's correct. Just WMAs.
And Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner DNR. We are not using these compounds currently on WMAs as we've discussed, and we would support this provision.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, but a question to the DNR. Right now, the policy of the DNR is insecticides use on state lands. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, members, yeah, this provision applies to wildlife management areas, but we do not use these compounds in other state lands that are part of the Outdoor Recreation Act either.
Thank you.
Senator Westrum, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to the testifier. So your position would be what seeds could they not be using on wetlands or WMAs? And so this would be for like food plots for wild animals, things like that. And I got a follow up.
Representative Morrison.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I was having internet issues. That's correct.
And Commissioner Meyer, maybe to that, to answer as well for Senator Westrum.
Mr. Meyer, you say you do not use them now. What's the reason for that? And if a seed company was to donate to a Pheasants Forever or a deer hunting chapter that would work in conjunction with you to plant food plots, would you reject that? Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrum, our cooperative farming agreements prohibit the use of treated seed currently. So yes, that would not be allowed.
And Ms.
Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, what is the reason for that?
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrum, we've determined that the use of those products are not beneficial to wildlife habitat that the purposes of those units are meant for. So that's the best answer I can give you on that right now.
So Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, just so I understand this, so the farmer's field next to the WMA may be planted with 160 or 300 acres that the same deer and raccoons and fox and every other wildlife run through. They might eat the farmer's corn, but then you wouldn't allow that same corn to be planted.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrum, you are correct. We cannot control what goes on private land. We can only control the state assets and protect those ourselves.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Westrum.
Reason I ask this question, there's another provision in the agriculture omnibus bill that is dealing with the use of any treated seeds and burning in an ethanol plant in another state Nebraska. But the reason it piques my interest is if we were to consider that ban in the state of Minnesota because of the concerns of the ash or the waste stream not being able to be fed to cattle or livestock, or it needs to be spread properly on the ground application. The logic in restricting that in Minnesota's ethanol plants, from time to time, there may be seed that's extra seed, surplus seed going to waste. And the discussion I've heard is some seed companies may donate it to wildlife chapters or to be planted on public lands for food plots. And if that's being banned here as well, it just puzzles me, because I would think the idea of food plots and making sure our wildlife have a good supply of food, especially standing corn in the winter that doesn't maybe get harvested, would be a noble cause that everybody could get around. But if we're going to restrict this and restrict the ethanol, it looks to me like there's a bigger move afoot here, and that makes it more concerning to me. So that's all I have to say right now.
Senator Westrum, just to be clear, the proposal is preventing it only on the public lands. If there was a local wildlife chapter that wanted to work with a farmer on private land for donated seed, they would be able to plant that. But the public money would not be used for that. I think it's also important.
Sure. Go ahead.
Senator, I think it's also important to note that the DNR just completed and published the deer spleen study that shows that these pesticides that are in seed treatment are showing up in deer spleens all over the state. All over the state. And so maybe Commissioner Meyer could just verify that and point to the results of those studies that are available and have been published. But Senator Westrum, I see your hand still up, so I want to make sure you're getting the opportunity to ask the questions.
Well, Mr. Chair, after Mr. Meyer, I'd just make another statement or question.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, I do not have that link to that map readily available. I will forward that to the conference committee members. It was rather alarming, the presence of the persistence of those compounds throughout the entire state. Not dissimilar to some of the PFAS maps that are there. It's a chemical that's persistent in our environment, it appears. I also just want to state that this language is really just codifying in statute current DNR practice and commissioner's orders. So this practice has been going on for quite a while, for the past several years, and this would just put it into statute as well.
Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, your comments lead to my bigger concern. You say it's just the public lands, but this is just the 2021 proposal. I'm not sure where you or the other advocates would end on this. It sounds like this is just the beginning of some efforts to rid the agriculture society of enormous progress that we've seen in seed and yield benefits for the food supply chain in the state and across the country. And so the deer can eat the corn in the farmer's field, but somehow we're not going to raise it on the public lands that the taxpayers pay for. And if a good deed from a seed company with extra seed would come about, we're going to thumb our nose at it. I'm concerned about the long haul you're on, and every trip has a first mile, and the slippery slope that this would continue appears pretty obvious to me with your comments, if the motivation is to go after it across the entire state. Mr. Chair, you may have mercury in your body. I may have mercury in my body. It's not a good toxic chemical or a metal to ingest, but it's a naturally occurring thing in our society. It's all about levels and tolerance in many, many areas of life, and chemicals that is part of the whole balance of the ecosystem. And so finding all kinds of things in deer or human bodies isn't the issue. It's levels that are tolerable versus not tolerable. So I've said enough on this, but it does give me some concern. When I look at the ag conference bill and this together, you start seeing a bigger picture.
Thank you, Senator Westrom. I know it's we're both aware about using the words motivation and motives and intent and that, but I think it's important to have this discussion because, you know, there are no naturally occurring neonicotinoids. And you were correct that mercury exists in the environment. It's an element. It's not a good element, but it does exist. And human activities have transported it more than we may have normally just come involvement of it. And we learn things. I remember when I was in high school, we would, or even junior high, they would have a bottle of mercury and you'd put it in your hand and watch it move around, silver liquid. That doesn't happen anymore because we learned. And so I would just, again, go back to Representative Morrison, Dr. Morrison, just on human health, again, on chlorpyrifos from her experience as a doctor. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, it seems that we're diverging a little bit from the bill here, but, you know, neonicotinoids and chlorpyrifos are naturally occurring substances. Those are chemicals that we, neurotoxins, as a matter of fact, that we voluntarily put into our environment. And I would hope that we would consider human beings and human health first and foremost when we're making policy. I confess I'm kind of stunned by some of what I just heard. The evidence around both neonicotinoids and chlorpyrifos are very frightening. And they've been, it's well documented in scientific literature. You know, for example, when the EPA decided to, when the Trump EPA decided to roll back the chlorpyrifos ban, the American Academy of Pediatrics was so stunned. They came out with a statement, and I'm just going to read it, it's short. There is a wealth of science demonstrating the detrimental effects of chlorpyrifos exposure to developing fetuses, infants, children, and pregnant women. The risk to infant and children's health and development is unambiguous. I find it stunning as a physician, as a mother, and as a Minnesotan that we would ignore clear sense and health and safety of our children first. And this impacts, of course, the people who are most proximate to these chemicals. So the people who work in agriculture are at highest risk. So let's protect our farmers, let's protect our children, and let's talk about what the actual science is. It's our job to protect Minnesotans here.
I'm not sure if Senator Ingebrigtsen or Senator Westrom was first. Senator Ingebrigtsen, were you?
Yep.
Go ahead.
You know, Mr. Chair?
Yep, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've got a new tool here that I'm trying to figure out, and I was clapping for a while when I was supposed to be raising my hand. So I'm just clapping because it's a nice day and I'm really happy. So just so everybody knows that. But interesting conversation for sure. Let's get back to the DNR, if I could, with regards to the putting these substances. Do you or do you not have the opportunity to put these substances on state trails or aquatic management areas? Does the DNR do that now?
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, no, we do not. As I had stated, we do not use these compounds.
I guess the better question was, can you?
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, they're not, as we've talked about, they're not outlawed right now, but we would not use them. We have other opportunities to control what we need to control that those chemicals would do, and we find that we would use alternatives if needed. Integrated pest management solutions are one of the best things that we would apply if needed as well. So, Mr. Chairman, I do have that map if you would like me to show what I found.
Mr. Meyer, if you could, and then Senator Ingebrigtsen, just it was a response to an earlier question.
Mr. Chairman, this is the map from our neonicotinoid exposure study by deer permit area. The dark areas are where we've detected positive results within the spleens of harvested deer, and the white areas are non-detected. Now, we have it. This research was somewhat limited due to the number of samples, but it is still scientifically valid, and we're continuing on with this work. But you can see the persistence nature of this compound within the environment, at least in the deer population. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
That's an interesting map. I see those little white counties all through the map. They're agricultural counties. I'm just wondering why they weren't on there, but I'll just move on. I do appreciate the comments and the discussion, and yes, we have certainly gotten away from the bill itself, and we've even gotten into child care and what we care about our children, and I don't think there's anybody on this committee that doesn't care. I do know that the legislature strays aside once in a while and brings up weird things, and I think there's going to be one today actually voted on, and that's legalizing marijuana. So, you know, when we talk about protecting our children, sometimes we end up protecting them the only way that we want to protect them, and we don't take an overall view of the harm that that could actually have. But anyhow, I digress. So I guess, let me back off, Mr. Chair, and I'll see if anybody else had any questions.
I know Senator Westrom was there. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up question for Dr. Morrell. Doctor, is your assertion that the corn that would be grown or the soybeans next to the WMAs is bad for the animals and the wildlife? Is that your position?
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't sure if you were talking to me, Senator Westrom.
Oh, Morrison. I didn't realize I was
a testifier today, but you know, my assertion is that the science is clear that these are dangerous neurotoxins for human beings.
So
Senator Westrom.
Doctor, if you could get more specific to the answer of my question. Because you're advocating the prohibition of these plants to be grown on public properties, WMAs. What's your belief and position on the fields next to these that are being grown with these same seeds?
Representative Morrison.
Safe for the wildlife to eat or not?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, you know, the bill is about WMAs, and as Assistant Commissioner Meyer has stated, this is already DNR position, so we're codifying it, making it the law that it's not, that they're not used on WMAs.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Westrom.
Dr. Morrison, would you please answer my question? You're here asserting the danger of them, and I want to know if your assertion is the danger only exists on public lands, or is it throughout all the farm fields that surround these WMAs that also is food for the wildlife?
Representative Morrison.
Realize if there's a connection, because it's pretty important on the basis of what you're telling us.
Sorry, Senator Westrom, that I stumbled in on you there. So, Representative Morrison.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, and then maybe we can move on. I think that the map that Commissioner Meyer showed us that these are used widely across the state and travel across the state.
Senator Westrom.
Could you just more clearly answer the question?
Is it Representative Morrison?
Is it good food or not good food for the wildlife?
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, I'm not sure that I understand your question, and I'm not sure that it's relevant to the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll try.
Senator Westrom.
Dr. Morrison, all these same seeds that produce corn and soybeans, which are food plots and natural food for wildlife. You understand that, correct?
Representative Morrison.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, I can tell you what I do know is that these pesticides and insecticides are neurotoxins that are harmful to human development.
And so, Mr. Chair, Dr. Morrison, is the food plots outside the WMAs that the same wildlife would be consuming bad or dangerous for that wildlife? Is that your position or not your position?
Representative Morrison.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, I repeat my position. The science is clear in human beings. Neonicotinoids also have been shown to contribute to our pollinator collapse, which also impacts our food supply. So I'm not really sure what you're getting at.
I'll ask a simpler question. I realize I got to. So your position is yes, the corn, the soybeans, the food growing around the WMAs that you want to prohibit the seeds being on the public lands is dangerous for the wildlife. That is the position I'm understanding. Is that correct?
Representative Morrison.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, it's
a yes or no question, Mr. Chair.
It would seem so, Senator.
Senator Westrom.
Helpful to know what position she's taking.
And I think, Senator Westrom, did you still have a follow-up question? Or?
I'm good, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other hands up? Let me just... Senator Ingebrigtsen.
You know, I'm going to reserve my comments with regards to the proposal after we get through your agenda. I think they're patiently waiting, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, let's move forward to the zoo. Mr. Frawley, welcome, and state who you're with for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is John Frawley, director of the Minnesota Zoo. With me today is Abigail Mosier, our CFO, and Missy McGrath, our legislative director. And thank you for inviting us back to testify. It's an important time, and I think it's our job, and it's important for us to be transparent with the committee on the tough position that the Minnesota Zoo is in right now, our state zoo. So as you know, we are a unique state agency. Our mission is to connect people to animals in the natural world to save wildlife. 42-year state investment. We have an operating budget of approximately $30 million pre-COVID. And our relationship with the state is we receive about one-third of our funding from the state, and two-thirds we generate through a smart business plan of operating a world-class zoo. We think it's a good model. Unfortunately, with the pandemic, that model of two-thirds revenue really flipped upside down on us and put us in a really tough position that we're going to explain in a little bit more detail today. I'll go into, I've presented before, but I think I'll go into a little bit deeper numbers related to the loss of revenue so you can understand the urgency to get back to that two-thirds engine. Closing on March 14th, we had to obviously do what a lot of groups did and suspend our contracts, delay projects, freeze expenditures. You know, we had to develop a plan, a financial plan to get through the pandemic. Unfortunately for us as a state agency, that model required us to go into major layoffs and cutbacks of staff and people. So over 125 positions at the Minnesota Zoo, over 33% of our workforce was laid off to create the model that would allow us to get through the pandemic. That's the model that we've been under ever since. It's a bare bones operation here at the zoo. We have had to disposition animals. We've had to cut back tremendously on all of our programming, which I'll give you a little bit of insight into. Those cutbacks have reduced our cost by nearly $8 million, but we're still in a tough spot of recovery. The overall biennium that we're just ending, we'll have anticipated losses of about $14.5 million in revenue. So if we don't get the budget appropriation, including the increases recommended by the governor and including the House position, we're going to continue to experience substantial loss of revenue. And it's going to be tough for us to get back to that two-thirds engine where, you know, we can kind of, you know, grow and move forward in our recovery. A lot of people have asked us about federal funding. As a government agency, we did not qualify for the first round of federal funding. A lot of people referred to as PPP loans. We did not qualify for that. The zoo has applied for shuttered venue grant applications, and it's pending, but it's likely the fund will run out of money. The zoo's application is down quite a few levels as far as how we qualify, so we're not too optimistic that we're going to be able to qualify for that. We have been notified that MMB is reviewing guidance released by the Treasury as it relates to the American Rescue Plan funds. Once again, the timing and eligibility are unclear as it relates to federal funding for the Minnesota Zoo. And for us to get back to our two-thirds engine with summer coming, timing is one of the biggest things and challenges we have in front of us. Going into a little bit of understanding of some of our numbers, we'd like to share some specific examples. Here's a chart that shows our 2020 attendance versus our 21. You can see the substantial decrease in our attendance for just that period of time. The next slide shows our households. The Minnesota Zoo has got one of the strongest households of zoos across the country. Membership over 41,000 households. We've been up to 43,000 historically. So we have a lot of households throughout Minnesota. Obviously, we're grateful to those members. A lot of them have stuck with us, but we did lose a substantial part of our base. We've done a lot to retain the members, drive-through events, virtual offerings, but we've still lost a substantial amount of our member, over 14,000 of our household memberships. So that's going to be a big challenge for us to rebuild that, as we don't have the programs and events and experiences that would bring those people back to the zoo unless we have the resources to rebuild.
Mr. Frawley, what is the price of a membership? Just if we could calculate. I realize there are different memberships, but what would be the average price of the membership? We could just get an idea of what that would be for 14,380.
Sure, Mr. Chair, committee members, I think we're really proud of our membership prices. It's right around our main membership household price is $159, which is, I think, a very good opportunity for Minnesotans, so it's very reasonable, but we've seen a dramatic decrease, and we don't see the recovery starting as fast as we'd like. So the other next impact I can show you, a lot of people experience the zoo. I mean, it's a world-class zoo. In a typical year, our bird show, for example, would be presented 730 times. Over 146,000 guests would attend it. We'd have over 60,000 guests experiencing animal encounters throughout the zoo. All of these programs have been halted. It'll take significant investments to rebuild these types of experiences. This is what our members and people joining the zoo or coming to the zoo are expecting. We have a good plan to rebuild, but we've cut these staff and these programs dramatically this last year. You know, as with all retail and hospitality across the state, our food and beverage and retail partners were impacted dramatically. Closures, event cancellations, limited capacity. They also had to lay off majority of their staff at all of our food and beverage partnerships. And given the limited opportunity for food and beverage over the course of the pandemic, our commissions and payments from our vendors is nearly $600,000 less in 21 as compared to before the pandemic. So you can see the numbers on food and beverage are pretty much gone away. Another area on top
probably just on that with the with those private vendors have been able to apply for PPP loans or assistance for lost revenue.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I believe they most likely did qualify. I don't have the specifics of our two vendors, but we can get that information to you. We can follow up on that.
Proceed.
Next slide, I think, is another area that people love the zoo. They love to hold events and special events and private events at the zoo. Our entire sales team was eliminated, unable to host, because we were unable to host events, and the future was unclear through COVID. In addition to losing our sales team, canceling events, canceling all the picnics and weddings and rentals, we've also lost about 18 to 24 minutes of booking most of those events, as we hear throughout the state. People plan ahead for those types of events, and we're not seeing any kind of movement on that front. And we're waiting for a budget before we can feel good about building back the staff to execute that. So once again, it's the appropriation that we're requesting would allow us to put these positions back into place and start building these types of programs back. A lot of members have been exposed to our Zoomobile program in our education department. We have an award-winning education department. The Minnesota Zoo is one of the strongest in the country. Before COVID, our education department was over 26 full-time employees. We're down to 5 employees. And those 5 are executing just virtual experiences, obviously, at this time. In a typical year, our camps and education programs would engage almost 300,000 to 400,000 people. And we've not been able to provide any of these types of programs, these on-site programs. Reductions in this area dramatically impact the earned revenue and the experiences that our members and visitors expect. So you can see some of the numbers that have not happened because of the pandemic. We're the largest conservation and environmental learning center for the state. But without the appropriation and the one-time increase, we'll not be able to build back these education programs. So, Mr. Chair, committee members, we are one of the 5th largest zoos in the country. We're an award-winning zoo. We spent 42 years building the zoo, and these are some of the examples of the statistics that make us a world-class zoo. These are things that have been impacted with this pandemic. Our request is would allow us to build back and get back to some of these numbers. Mainly it gets back to that one-third, two-thirds engine. The sooner we can get back to that relationship where we can earn our own revenue, we get back on track to providing all of these amazing programs to Minnesota. And before I close on my last slide, I would just say that, people love the Minnesota Zoo. We're fortunate that we have it right here in Minnesota. I think we've been hearing a lot of people aren't, financially can't afford to travel or fly places or don't feel comfortable traveling and flying and leaving the state. But the fact that we have a world-class destination right here in our own state, I think is really important. So we feel the need to do the best to serve Minnesota and get back open. We have a thoughtful plan to reopen. It's represented in our request. And I really appreciate the time we've had over this last couple months to be able to share it. It's tough news to report to you, but I think that's, like I said, our job is just to be transparent and let you know what's going on here at this state asset. And I would open it up for Mr. Chair for any questions you might have at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Frawley. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and once again, Mr. Frawley, for the presentation. No question, we have a wonderful, wonderful zoo here in the state of Minnesota. But I'm going to ask the question of, have you been requesting from the governors for your allocations directly for the federal money? Have you made direct of the $2.8 billion that the governor has, have you gotten a hold of the governor directly to ask for money from that $2.8 billion coming from the feds?
Mr. Chair, committee members, you know, we have Ms. Mosier, our CFO, who's been working on that, all the federal requests. I'll ask her to address that.
Welcome to the committee and state your name and your position for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Abigail Mosier. I'm the Chief Financial Officer at the Minnesota Zoo. Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, we did participate in a process coordinated by Minnesota Management and Budget on behalf of the governor's office. And my understanding is Minnesota Management and Budget was awaiting the guidance from the Treasury, which I know recently arrived. And so as Director Frawley said, you know, we are, like other agencies, kind of awaiting more information and next steps from MMB and the governor's office based on that guidance that just arrived very recently. So we don't have an update on that.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, so thank you. So the question still remains, have you asked for the approximate losses that you experienced during the pandemic? Have you inquired from the governor at all with regards to your total amounts?
Ms. Mosier.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, there were some broad categories in the federal legislation of which revenue loss was one of those categories. There were also some other categories like infrastructure, et cetera. And so, you know, we've been very transparent with the governor's office and MMB, as we have with these committees, about what our revenue loss is and is projected to be, and as well as our infrastructure needs. And so that is the kind of information we have shared. I do know in working with MMB closely that the revenue loss piece is one they were particularly interested in the federal guidance around, because the previous stimulus bills had you know, limited the ability to include revenue loss. This one allows it, but the fine print was going to be important. So we continue to be transparent about all that information to the governor's office and MMB so that they can make, you know, decisions with that information.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you for that. And so I believe the answer is yes. And so I guess my next question is, are you requesting the total amount that is in the governor's budget as well as the House's proposals? Is that a fair question?
Ms. Mosier or Director Frawley?
Mr. Chair and members, so we have, you know, made our needs transparent and you know, ultimately, and Director Frawley can correct me if I'm wrong, but ultimately, you know, we do expect that the governor's office at MMB would make a determination about the right funding source, whether that be federal or state funds. You know, within a broader context.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
As Director Frawley said, you know, ultimately, you know, our need is immediate. Our ability to rebuild is based on resources, and whether those resources come from federal or state funds, you know, we would defer to the governor, MMB, and the legislature on what's the right approach to that.
But thank you, Mr. Chair. But to understand, I mean, if I'm MMB and the governor, I mean, I'm going to want to know exactly what you're asking for. So I'm assuming you've given them some total numbers.
Ms. Mosier.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, we've provided the same information to all parties.
Thank you.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, just to follow up on your line of questioning, I look at, maybe Mr. Frawley can go back to that first slide that had the topic areas of lost revenue. And I was hurrying to get my calculator going on the membership lost during COVID, with the 14,000 plus members lost at $159 membership. I think that one there's so just that membership loss is $2.286 million, unless I hit the wrong button on my phone. That's what I had there. So that's a clearly documented revenue loss on just memberships. It would seem that gate, you have the numbers on gate loss. You should have that. Now the food and beverage, maybe it's your loss of the commission that should be documentable. The retail should be documentable. If the stores that sell stuff, the cute stuffed animals and the tigers and all those things, if they're not being sold, you should have lost revenue. I think the same things that businesses went through on documenting losses would be relatively simple. No Zoomobile, no pro education programs that people pay for, there should be documented lost revenue. So this is somewhat newer information than what we had before. And I believe the guidance that came this week said public lost revenue. And I think where Senator Ingebrigtsen and I are in agreement is that we would support very specific asks for federal money on lost revenue. And if we can get those actual numbers of lost revenue. And that may be more, that to me just looks like that's going to be more than what we have in our bills, because you've got more information. But Senator Ingebrigtsen, just to see if that's kind of in line with your thinking.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. And it is in line with mine. And I think that's what our letter to them, to you, to the Mr. Frawley and your staff, is that making sure that you are requesting those dollars. Again, we're getting close to the deadline. So if you can show some, you know, some evidence of that someplace on a document, that would be great. But yes, we are in agreement on that.
Members, any other questions? I don't see any other hands up right now. Any other questions for Mr. Frawley or Ms. Mosier? Mr. Frawley, would you be able to get us actual numbers relatively quickly?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen and members, Ms. Mosier and our team does, we do have a model and we have been tracking all of those numbers. So we will be able to break some of these things. We have these numbers. We can break those down and provide that and get the detail. And I want to thank you for your support and finding a way to help and get through this. And so we'll get that and make it clear and precise.
Mr. Chair, members.
Oh, Ms. Mosher, were you?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize if my answer wasn't clear earlier. I did just want to reiterate that the governor's budget does, and the governor's recommendation for the zoo's appropriations does reflect projected revenue loss that we've estimated in our models that we've shared with this committee and MMB. And so the governor's recommendation does reflect our need based on our projected revenue loss. And so we can provide additional detail of what's behind the revenue loss numbers in that, but just wanted to make sure I was being clear about the fact that the recommended appropriations do reflect our need and that we will make sure it's clear that whether it's federal or state funds, you know, that need is the same.
Thank you, Ms. Mosier. So there's a difference between projected revenue loss and actual revenue loss. And I think it would be good to have those numbers that are there. Obviously, and maybe I don't want to speak for Senator Ingebrigtsen, but if we negotiate out a budget and we provide X number of dollars for the zoo, and then we adjourn, and then we find out that there's money that could have been spent federally. That money that we would be spending in state dollars could have been spent somewhere else within the budget. So, if it's federally applicable, we feel very strongly that it should be done because it's a COVID, that's what our federal representatives voted on. But Senator Ingebrigtsen, maybe to that point, and I know Representative Morrison has a question.
And I agree, Representative, or Mr. Chair, that I think a letter to the governor with your, obviously it can't be exactly, but whatever you have documented, as your loss due to COVID, and CC'd to both myself and Chair Hansen would be something that we're looking for your request. So, and we already know that there's a loss there. There's especially in the zoo and the science museum as well, I'm sure. And we're requesting that from all the different agencies but just something very, very quickly, if you could, and for our finance people to understand what's going on. Thank you.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really just wanted to thank Mr. Frawley and Ms. Mosier for being here today and for all the good work that they and everyone at the zoo do. It's such an incredible asset to our state, and I certainly hope that we're able to come together to find the support that the zoo needs. We cannot risk losing this incredible regional asset. So just gratitude to both of you and everyone that you work with.
Thank you. Science Museum.
Good morning, Chair Hansen, committee members. My name is John Severson. I am the Director of Government Relations at the Science Museum of Minnesota, and I am joined by our Chief Financial Officer, Barry Gisser. I will open with apologies that President Brown had a previously scheduled commitment and wasn't able to join us this morning. Thank you to President Frawley for his comments as well. Senator Ingebretson, you are correct that many of the challenges faced by the zoo can be mirrored in the financials of the Science Museum. Within this bill, we have several provisions which are of importance to the Science Museum. Generally, we are each biennium here to speak in support of our general appropriation, which is $1,079,000 annually. These are incredibly important general operating funds, which help to undergird our operations and provide a clean, safe, and secure facility for our visitors. Also included in the bill is a one-time appropriation, which would help support the organization as we emerge from the COVID pandemic. This number, and that is a $1,939,000 appropriation. That number, as the bill was originally introduced as House File 2285 by Representative Keeler, was roughly $3.8 million, and that was based on an audited financial loss that we had for fiscal year 20. And was submitted to our business insurance as a business interruption claim, which was ultimately denied. But that is the basis for that number. That number was revised with the delete all at the close of session. So that is where we are there. And also included are two projects in the fiscal 20 Environmental Natural Resource Trust Fund bill, which power some of the research that we are doing at our St. Croix Watershed Research Station. As President Brown previously testified, support research into blue-green algae blooms in our remote pristine lakes, and also the effects of rock snot or Didymocenia in the cold water streams along the North Shore. And so those are both important projects that we hope to see through. As President Frawley shared, it has been an incredibly difficult time. And as we have testified before both bodies and the conference committee, the impact has been significant for the Science Museum. We started March of 2020 with 499 employees. That employee count is down roughly 50% to 250 employees. Of that number, 158 have been permanently eliminated at this point, and 94 are suspended as we assess our operational capacity and our ability to bring some of our instructors and other part-time employees back as we are able to rebuild capacity. Even after significant expense reductions, we are projecting an operating loss of at least $15 million for the two-year period from March 2020 to March 2022 due to the direct impact and the indirect impact as we hope to see visitors return, but we do project that there will still be a lag with that as visitor confidence returns. In terms of the advocacy and work that we have done to secure funding, we have advocated very aggressively at the city, county, state, and federal levels to make decision makers aware of our financial situation. There have been some highlights among that, including our ability to secure two PPP loans, the first through the CARES Act, which was $4.5 million, and we just submitted our forgiveness request in April, just last month. And we also received a $2 million PPP2 loan through the Consolidated Appropriations Act, and that forgiveness will be submitted in fall of 2021. So the outcomes of those are still to be determined. We have also seen some benefit from the Employee Retention Tax Credit, including $700,000 in credits by the end of quarter one. And Barry Gisser can give you more information on that as we move forward. But even with that, based on the size of our current losses and projected losses, there is still significant room for us to see improvement. One of the major provisions of the Consolidated Appropriations Act, which other cultural institutions have been able to access, is the shuttered venues provision, which was championed by Senator Klobuchar. We unfortunately did not meet the necessary budget requirements, so we're not able to access those dollars. In response to the American Rescue Plan Act, we do continue to monitor those provisions. One of the avenues that we are working with is there are significant dollars that have been provided directly to schools to support summer out of school time and enrichment programs. This is one of the areas that we do excel. And so we are reaching out and working with district administrators and partners to see where we may be of assistance in helping those districts reach their goals and helping the students of Minnesota. You know, the reality is that while we have received some assistance, our need is still great, and we know that there's going to be no one single source. As Ms. Mosier shared, we are working. We have reached out to Deed in specific Ramsey County, and are now working with the city in various levels of, you know, as different bills have come through, there have been different pools of relief dollars that we have pursued. At this point, the challenge has been particularly with the Ramsey County dollars. We were too big to help. You know, the idea there is the commissioners wanted to get dollars into as many organizations as possible, and based on our size and our operating budget, we were not eligible for those. So this is where we have turned to the state in hopes that we may have some cash infusion to help us really as we turn from the current status to rebuilding and relaunching. And serve to be an economic generator for downtown St. Paul and the region as we return to work. With that, I will say that we will gladly stand for questions. Please feel free if you have specific financial questions. Chief Financial Officer Gisser will be available as well. So we thank you for the time.
Thank you. And as members are looking to raise their hands, just on the house offer, we had the documented loss of operating revenue, the 3.8 and change, but we did not have an unlimited target. So we were able to provide what we could. But I think that, again, operating loss is part of the public record, and that would be clearly something that should be included. But the similar things of lost memberships or lost also would seem to be documentable. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I asked the same question from the Science Museum. If you're requesting the relief money, and if the answer is yes, which you're contacting the governor's office to ask for those dollars, if you were to receive those dollars, would that make a difference on the amount that's in the House bill as well as the governor's proposal overall?
Mr. Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen. As you can see, if you put the numbers together, the $3.8 million was our audited loss for the closeout of fiscal 20. With this year, we have already seen gate losses amounting roughly $6 million. Membership is off another $2 million. Our membership is down about 46%. We started at the outset of March 2020 with roughly 30,000 member households. And The vast majority of those are either our dual or family memberships. Those are $89 and $139. I will also state, just for the record, that we do have a suite of discounted access programs called Great Ticks, which are available to families and individuals who aren't able to pay that, but do provide access. And so we're grateful to both the state and private philanthropy that helped to make that possible. So the bottom line is, we would love to see that be an and, because the need is there. As Barry would be able to say, we do have, we have been able to manage this through cash flow, but we have dipped very deeply into reserves, and are significantly leveraged now. This particular appropriation would give us the flexibility to emerge from the pandemic a much stronger organization and better positioned to bring back staff and kind of grow the overall economies of the business.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
So, Mr. Chair, so I understand you have losses. I mean, I tried to put that together in my head. It's several million, upwards of over $10 million worth of losses. Are you asking the governor for those appropriations that you're minus on your ledger? And if you are, are you doing that? I guess that's the first question.
Mr. Severson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, we have not been in direct conversation with the governor's office. We have reached out to MMB early in the process. We have been in conversation with Commissioner Groves' office because Deed was the authorizing agency for the CARES Act dollars. So we were, or one of them. We have been reaching out to those. And as Ms. Moser shared, it has really been, the reality is trying to navigate across federal and state partners to determine what is the best source and where is the best avenue to receive those. So it's, we are making a case and how that we are open to wherever the relief may come from. And we are certainly open to reaching out to the governor's office to doing that. We just have not done so at this point.
So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Britton.
If that's exactly what we're looking for, I think I don't want to speak on behalf of Chair Hansen. However, just a document asking MMB, who's the arm of the governor, I guess, get a document to us that what you're asking for your request. That would be very helpful because we, Chair Hansen and I are looking out for our area of government that we're overseeing here. So we want to make sure that these areas are addressed, and we need that kind of documentation so we can, when it gets to the end discussions here, we'll have some tallies that we know what we're talking about. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stevenson. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Severson, for being here today. Boy, listening to some of the things you referenced, like the blue-green alga blooms and pristine lakes, that is one that scares me a lot. I think it should scare all of us. Mm. And thinking about the important summer programming, we need that this summer, perhaps more than we ever have. I'm just wondering if you could just plainly, if we don't come to an agreement on a budget, what will happen to the Science Museum?
Mr. Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Morrison. As President Brown testified previously, it will obviously have an adverse effect. Those, particularly the general appropriation dollars, are very important to our operations and keeping a clean and safe facility, which of course is more important than ever as we emerge from the pandemic and try to rebuild visitor confidence in external experiences. We do have a diverse revenue stream, which includes state support, but also earned income as well as private philanthropy. But the reality is that we will likely be looking at reductions in program and education staff And it really, at this point, robs us from the opportunity to really look at the plan for bringing folks back and expanding our hours. So currently we are open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. As restrictions have been loosened, we've been looking at adding additional time, and that just likely wouldn't be possible if we don't come to an agreement at this point.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Stevenson. Well, I certainly hope that we are able to come together and craft a budget so that resources like our incredible Science Museum can continue to serve the people of Minnesota and surrounding states too.
Mr. Chair. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, to that point, if I could, I think, you know, I agree with Representative Morrison. It's a wonderful place for kids to go and learn about science and everything that's in the forefront moving forward, and I would hate to see it closed down as well. That's why I think, quite frankly, you're talking the zoo and you're talking the Science Museum today, for them to close. To have to close down because the House and the administration is not willing to take 2 years time out on electric car California emissions seems to be a very cheap way of keeping government going. I'm kind of losing my thought process as to why anybody would not consider that. But that was our first proposal. Was to take it away totally. Second proposal is a 2-year hiatus. I think that's a real, real reasonable, real cheap way of keeping these functions open for the state. And so the House, I think, needs to understand that particular issue has not gone away. I know there's been some talk that the Senate has given up on their California emissions car. That's not the case. Just understand that's not the case. And until we get our targets, we can, you know, again, Mr. Chair, I really appreciate the information we're getting today, but we need targets, but understand. And there seemed to be some confusion out there, whether it's Facebook land or wherever it is that the Senate is giving up their proposal for California emissions. There's nothing further from the truth. So, it seems like I think to the general public that are listening that would be a pretty easy fix for us moving forward, keeping all the state agencies open. And I think it's a very, very small compromise. But again, I digress a little bit, but just understand it's still on the table, please.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I've got a couple of questions on the federal funds, and then maybe address the, you know, what our purpose is. So I know, and, you know, you and I have been involved in trying to work out our issues, but it seems there's I've got a maybe clarifying here question. There's a, like Senator Rosen has put a hold on federal funds. There's the LCC process of putting a hold on federal funds. And I'm a little unclear on, you know, how long that hold lasts and what that process would do if we go past May 17th, you know, and you're on Senate Finance. So I'm just asking you what, you know, as we make these asks of, which I think we should, and I think if we can document those losses, what does that mean with a hold on federal funds?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for the question. Yes, I am on the State Senate Finance Committee, as well as you are on the House Ways and Means Committee. So I would think that information information as such is being shared back and forth. So the short answer is I'm uncertain at this time as to why those decisions are being made, but I think that would be a question that you would want to ask your leadership over there. as to why. So hopefully they can come to some resolve. But I do have nonpartisan staff on board here. If he could make a comment, Mr. Mueller, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mueller, if you could elaborate.
Mr. Chairman and members of the conference committee, Dan Mueller, a fiscal analyst. That hold that was put on by the Senator Kiffmeyer only will last until the end of the regular session. So that's according to the statutes that govern the LAC process.
And Mr. Mueller, does that hold, could another hold be put on during special session, or is it just a regular session opportunity?
Mr. Chairman and members, that hold only is last during the regular session, and during the special session, unless there is a change in the request, and a new hold cannot be put on.
Thank you. Senator Ingebrigtsen, anything to that point?
No. Does that answer your question?
That does. That's helpful.
Okay.
Members, just a little bit on what the House's position was. We, and I don't think anybody, Senator Ingebrigtsen, you've been very clear that all this is held up because of a two-year delay in clean cars. So whether it's the Science Museum, the Minnesota Zoo, or the other agencies, or the policy. So what we're trying to do here in our fourth offer is we tried to deal just with policy to see if there was something we could get done. And I've asked you and pled with you before, is there something we could get done with LCCMR, both the 20 and the 21, particularly the 20, which has an expiration date where the money goes back to the corpus on July 1st. We have the budgets for all of these agencies, you know, that we've got 280 plus pages of legislation. So that's a large buffet that's in front of us. But could we just get the hors d'oeuvres done? Could we get these policy items that we could, I believe we could agree on some that are not fiscal? Because as you know, the conference committee process ends when the regular session ends. Then we're into a working group. And we don't know how a working group is gonna work if there's a special session, which I think is now very likely. So I'm looking at what is the possible. And I understand, and maybe I think you clarified it again, but that everything is held up for the clean car rulemaking. I'm looking at what is possible to do what's right for Minnesotans. If we can get some policy done, or if we can get the LCCMR done, I think it's getting out of reach for the entire budget to be done by May 17th. But I do appreciate that you, and I think we will continue to work on asking for these federal funds, and hopefully each branch or the House and the Senate and the governor would be able to meet these needs that are here. I think it will make our budgeting easier whenever that particular activity occurs. So that's what we're trying to do. Take a little bit, see if we can get some accomplishment, because I believe that one accomplishment leads to another accomplishment. I understand, and I think Minnesotans understand, the Senate's position to hold everything up.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
My final comments to that is that is a compromise. That was a compromise right out of the chute for clean cars, from a repeal to a simple timeout. That particular compromise that the Senate made to the House has not been addressed at all. With regards to the LCCMR, you know very well that we can't do anything moving forward with especially in light of the fact that I have a $15 million negative target. So that makes it very tough to move forward with anything real meaningful at this time until we get that done. So you haven't suggested any compromise on the Senate California cars, which is very obvious, our priority. And I think people need to understand that by taking a two-year hiatus, Minnesotans would understand why the administration would be moving forward, if it's a good idea or if it's a bad idea. The ag community could weigh in a little more. The heavy equipment, the mining operations could weigh in a little bit more as to what is that going to mean? What is it going to mean if we move forward? And what does it mean if California emissions happen to be adopted by the state of Minnesota and they change radically? They drastically change things in California. Does that mean Minnesota has to follow suit? Or can we back down to the federal standards? But right now, the California standards are more stringent than the federal standards. And our administration is agreeing with that. And I just happen to believe that Minnesotans, if it is described properly to them, would say, let's slow down. Let's take a little closer look at this to see what happens. And I don't think that's a tough one for this committee to even grapple with, especially in light of the fact that all these wonderful departments that Minnesota has here that are under our purview. And I'm very, very proud to have worked with the Environment Natural Resources and our zoo and all the players here with regards to the environment. And I would hate to see that stifled in any more way than what COVID has already done, over some reluctance, insistence to not come with another proposal with regards to clean cars. So I don't know how more clear I can be. And the 10,000, you know, and we keep going back to the 10,000, and I don't know if Commissioner Bishop is here or not, but the 10,000 comments representing over, you know, 5 million Minnesotans is not really a lot of folks, and especially with COVID, you know, the people that weren't able to get around, they had a lot of things on their mind, a lot of other things other than this. And I might ask a question, if I could, Mr. Chair of the MPCA at this time.
Is Commissioner Bishop on, or Ms. Gauthier?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Sorry, I had a moment there with my computer. Sorry.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Gauthier. Good to see you. And again, let me quick finish my comments with regards to the whole committee here, that I'm more than happy to continue and look forward to working with you moving forward, Representative Hansen and members. I'm sorry, Chair Hansen. Ms. Gauthier, I'm wondering, are you familiar with a project that's coming towards the Twin Cities with regards to the industry, the electric car industry? I'm not sure exactly what maker has coming to the city, to the Minneapolis metro area, with about approximately 100 cars for some test sites and anything like that. Are you familiar with anything like that coming forward?
Commissioner Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the conference committee. For the record, my name is Greta Gauthier, Assistant Commissioner, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. To your question, Senator Ingebrigtsen, no, I am not. I apologize. Nope. I think there are others on my team who would be, but I do not. I am not aware of that. So,
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Would you please inquire with Commissioner Bishop and those folks, Ms. Gauthier, and just get back to me with a note if, in fact, that's true, and or if and when it's going to happen. And if not, that's fine. This question can just go off to the side. But I understand that there was talk about doing that. I'm not saying this whether either right or wrong. I just wanted to know if the MPCA was involved in that or knows about it. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebrigtsen. Are you by chance referring to Zeus Trucks, which is a manufacturer of electric vehicles coming into Minnesota or building into Minnesota? And they're in White Bear Lake. They're not really a testing facility, but they're manufacturing. And there are some testing of electric cars going on in the state. I don't have that data right at hand, but we will dig into it and get back to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
No, thank you for that. I'd love to have that information.
Members, we have a couple of questions. Representative Wozlawick and then Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out, you know, we're seeing the spread of CWD and EAB, and we're seeing now an announcement, a news article that PFAS has been found in mother's breast milk, and that companies were lying about the effects of PFAS. So I guess I'm seeing a need for increased investments in our agencies to be able to address these major issues that are, you know, we're learning more and more about that are sort of becoming bigger issues and more widespread. And I'm wondering if Senator Ingebrigtsen could maybe talk a little bit. I know he's not in charge of setting budget targets, but why the Senate took a position of, you know, cutting things when we have a budget surplus, when we have all these issues, big issues across the state that we're needing to address. So I don't know if he has any insights on that, but I think it's, you know, DNR has to be handling some of the CWD and the EAB and other things, and MPCA with PFAS. So Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm not sure if you have any insights on that, but just wondering what if there was a reason for the budget target that you got that you might know about.
Well,
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, and thank you for that question. I'm sure you're familiar that the budgets we're dealing with here are wide-ranging, and we have different revenue funnels, revenues that come into the state of Minnesota. So general fund budget really isn't that big of a situation here with regards to all the funding that goes on with the MPCA and the DNR. A lot of it is fee-based and continues to move forward. A lot of things will be even during a extra session, everything will be still moving forward, and everybody needs to understand that because we go into a special session. I mean, for goodness sakes, there's been 20 out of the last 21 years now. I understand they're one-day sessions, but when people look at that, they go, gosh, what are you guys doing down there? You never get your work done. But they will continue until there is hopefully not a government shutdown, but there is a real difference. We continue to the end of June. So these targets that we get are generally set and agreed upon by leadership. And you know, that's about all I can tell you. I mean, everybody's concerned about the funding of these very important projects. That's what comes part of the responsibility of us in the conference committees to prioritize until we know different. So until I know different what the targets are going to be, and Representative Chair Hansen, until we both get to know what that is, these are the chips that we're dealt, and we're going to have to deal with that. Now, if there's plus money coming in, we'll deal with that. If there's even less money coming in, which I don't think will happen, then we'll have to deal with that as well. So. But all of those projects you talk about, Representative, are very important. But again, it comes down to prioritization.
Representative Wozlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to reiterate, I think, you know, now's the time for us to be making these investments. What we do know about a lot of these issues is the longer that we put off dealing with them, the more expensive they get. Which means that in future budgets and future years, we're going to be having to make even tougher decisions about now that, you know, if we're not investing in these programs and these agencies now, that later on when these problems have become even bigger because we have failed to address them, they're going to cost us more money. And we don't know what sort of financial shape we're going to be in at that point and how we're going to be able to handle those things. So just I think there's, you know, we're learning more and more, and there's some urgency here with wanting to deal with these issues now as opposed to waiting, and I just want to reemphasize that. Thank you.
Senator Tomassoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe to add a little bit to Senator Ingebretson's question about the electric vehicles coming to St. Paul. I made a comment the other day about 60-some vehicles being on, electric vehicles being on a dealership lot in Hibbing. So I did a follow-up on it. It turns out they had actually had over 100, and it was a fleet purchase, and the fleet purchase was brought to St. Paul for what I believe is a ride-sharing program. So I think that's what Senator Ingebretson was asking about. And I'm sure someone could find out about it if they want to.
And Senator Tomassoni, I remember that comment. So then that wasn't retail on the lot. That was a bulk purchase. So how many EVs were actually on the lot then for just drive up by a truck or a car?
Well, Mr. Chairman, when I drove by, there were 100. But I don't know how many are there now.
Members, any other questions? Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to reiterate Representative Wozlawick's really excellent point, I think, about prevention. This has been a theme in our conversations over the course of the year and in our conference committee as well. Prevention is always better than the treatment, and it really must be our adage to first do no harm. So when we have scientific evidence around a number of different issues, we have to act to prevent harm done to people, done to land, done to water, done to wildlife. The irony of holding up our budget talks in the Environment and Natural Resources Committee over working to address air quality problems and to address climate change, honestly, is nonsensical. This is an emergency that needed to be addressed years ago. We cannot wait any longer. We need to do this. And I also wanted to note that in the clean cars conversation, I made this point the other day, but I'd like to reiterate it. The ALJ noted in its ruling that the comments, the 10,000 comments that were just referenced recently, many of the ones opposed to the clean cars rulemaking were based on misperceptions and misinformation, such as that it would require people to buy an EV, which is not true, that it would stop all sales of internal combustion engines vehicles, which is not true, that it would regulate farm vehicles or gas grills or other things that the rule does not regulate. So I wanted to reiterate that and clear that up for the public. And finally, we could be getting the LCCMR bills done because they are independent of budget negotiations. And as Chair Hansen pointed out, the 2020 bill goes away on July 1st. So I implore my fellow committee members, conferees, to come together to get this done for Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fisher. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, to that point, I appreciate those concerns. What I don't understand, we're kind of biting around the whole issue here, little bites at a time, but they're becoming bigger, and it's very clear to me that Minnesotans care about electric cars. Every time we have a meeting, there's another pot of cars found someplace in Minnesota. So it is working. The environment is something that's very important to Minnesotans. In conversations with the governor just yesterday, he admitted, and he knows that the industries are actually moving in that direction. So I'm sitting here still wondering, why in the world would we want to jump on with California air standards when we're already moving in the direction of the concerns of climate change. Maybe I need to say that. All those that are concerned about climate change, the industry is moving that direction. People have a choice. They are obviously making choices. And again, they don't need the heavy-handed regulations of government to dictate. It's very clear. It's working. It's already working. With regards to LCCMR, that's part of the budget. That discussion should end from this point forward. It's part of our bill. It's part of our budget. That's not uncommon to have it in the environmental budget. So, but I understand the angst that wanting to move forward, and we're all getting anxious and antsy. But let's come to the table and at least acknowledge that we have come well over two thirds of the way than what we were for a year ago when I was negotiating with regards to the clean car standards, from a total repeal to a 4-year hiatus, now down to a two-year moratorium. I don't think that's out of the question at all. And for sure, it's very reasonable. And I think a lot of Minnesotans that are paying attention to this are agreeing with me.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the discussion, robust discussion we're having on the issue. And I want to remind folks that we're not just talking about electric cars. We're also talking about low emission vehicles. And this is just as important part of the equation as everything else. And the reason we cannot afford to wait is several different things. As well as Senator Ingebrigtsen mentioned, people can go out and find some of these cars out there. Repeatedly, we've heard that is not the case. And if you take a look at the ruling from the law judge starting on page 37, there are repeated references to comments that he had heard and taken into testimony and that he'd seen in the MPCA report, saying that people are not able to find the cars here and they're being told, unquote, go to states like California if you want to buy those cars. This is part of the reason that we need to do something now to help move it along. And more importantly, the reason that is so important that we move is we've got people's health at stake here. Why should we tell people, you know what, yeah, we want clean air, but you're going to have to wait 2 more years? Why should we tell people that are in environmental justice areas, I'm sorry, you're going to have to wait 2 more years before we're going to start doing something about cleaning up the air so that you can have better health outcomes? We're also telling all Minnesotans, you know what, you could say, you know, instead of saving $40 to $80 million a year, you're going to have to wait 2 more years before you can start doing that. That's what I hear when I hear you saying, we're going to wait 2 more years. We're going to wait 2 more years before people save money. We're going to wait 2 more years before people have clean air. We're going to wait 2 more years before we start improving the health of people most at risk in our state. And that's why I feel it is not possible for us to wait 2 more years. And we all see this is something that's coming down the road. Let's make sure that we can do it as quickly as possible to help those communities that don't have a voice in the process right now. And we're just trying to give them the voice saying, please hear us. Please allow us to have the clean air as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Members, any other questions or comments? Minnesotans, I think it's important to know that everything that we're doing here are choices. A budget target is a choice. So choosing to have a cut for environmental agencies is a choice. Choosing to look at dedicated funds to RAID for things that you want to spend money on is a choice. Choosing to hold up policy for a year unless you get what you want is a choice. Holding up the budgets for the Department of Natural Resources, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, the Minnesota Zoo, the Minnesota Science Museum, Explore Minnesota Tourism, parts of the Met Council, the Minnesota Conservation Corps, is a choice. That is not a choice that the House, which is controlled by Democrats, made. Senator Ingebrigtsen made a comment about we always seem to be in special session. Well, there was one time when we weren't in special session. The time we were not in special session in 2013 and 2014 is when Democrats controlled the House, the Senate, and the governorship. And we not only ended on time, we ended ahead of time. What we have happening in our country and in this state is brinksmanship of my way or the highway. If I don't get what I want, I'm going to hold things hostage. It's unprecedented in our history. And it's unfortunate. It's unnecessary. But it is believable. We clearly hear you. We're just disgusted by it. With that, we're adjourned.